you know, Matt has a lot of talent with YouTube, but at a certain point, his role is really just an advisor. So yeah, it was always part of the plan.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Coding Cutter Podcast. So this week we talked to Ethan, who is the CEO of Refold. We hear about his experience building Refold and his personal journey studying languages.
But before we get into that, you guys know the drill. We have to collectively destroy the like button.
And make sure to follow us on Twitter because we tweet stuff related to Japan and Japanese.
And related to smashing the like button.
So Ethan, yeah, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Ethan. I'm the CEO of Refold. I'm in SF today. So my background, I've been learning languages for a long time, really. When I was 14, I enrolled in Japanese classes in high school. Did that for 4 years and then 2 years in college. Had a really hard time with it. And then a couple of years later, decided to learn Spanish, tried the like Duolingo approach, and then gave up on that. And then decided like I needed to dedicate like a whole year to it. And so I started really getting into like the language hacking side of things. Eventually realized that wasn't going to work either. Then found Matt, Matt for Japan channel, learned about immersion learning. He and I eventually connected and we wrote the guide together and then decided that it was worth starting a company over. So that is how I wound up here today.
Like, was there a particular story of how you guys met, or was it just like you guys just start talking about like Refold
in the DMs?
Because yeah. That was also around the time of Matt's previous business, MIA. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I was actually a member of MIA. So I was in Ecuador. Actually, I might have been Peru at that point. And I just came to this realization that like traditional methods were never going to work for me. Language hacking wasn't going to work for me, not to get to the level of fluency that I wanted. And so I sort of went on a quest to find a different way of learning. Came across MIA, immediately subscribed to their Patreon, watched a whole bunch of the videos, watched or read all the stuff that I could. Joined the Discord, got in there, and I the vibe of the Discord wasn't really like what I wanted, so I decided to start like a separate community. And so I started the MIA Spanish Discord server. And it wasn't until about 6 months later that Matt and I connected. And he reached out and was like, hey, I heard you started like an MIA Spanish server. And so we just started talking about that. And he and I got to talking about sort of the guide and the troubles that he had been having in writing it. And that we both saw like a huge opportunity for, you know, what could be. And I come from a startup background and a project management and software development background. So when I saw what they were doing with MIA, I was like, oh man, we could like take this, you know, so much further than it is right now. And so that was sort of how we connected and started talking.
So was the original plan like for you to join MIA, or what did the talk after?
No, I personally needed help with learning Spanish, and the MIA guide as it was like didn't really satisfy my understanding of how learning a language is supposed to work. And so I just said like, Matt, like I will volunteer as like a project manager to help write the guide because I personally need it for my own learning process. So that's actually how we started working together on it.
I see. So how did you actually become like the CEO of this like new thing with Matt? Because previously he was one of the main guys running MIA, right?
Yeah, definitely. So he and I worked on the guide for, let's see, the roadmap took us roughly 3 months to write, at least stages 0 through 2. And we liked working together and, you know, I have a lot of experience with project management, so the project actually happened. And so once I had sort of demonstrated my skills there, and we had demonstrated that we liked working together, we decided to start the company. And, you know, Matt has a lot of talent with YouTube and a lot of creating content and really creating content that speaks to people and helps address burning issues that they're having. But starting a business is like a completely different skill set, and running a business is a completely different skill set. Doing project management, completely different skill set. And I think it's, we were like a good pair because he could take on sort of the creative aspects, and I could take on the more operational aspect.
I see. And I guess like, did you have any like doubts going to business with Matt at that time? Because at that time there was a lot of like controversy going around with MIA.
Yeah, I wasn't super worried about the controversy per se. obviously there were some potential like legal issues. So I actually brought in a litigation attorney and reviewed all of the communications and interviewed most everybody involved, laid out a timeline and tried to understand the legal risk. And once my lawyer gave me the okay on it, I was ready to get started with it.
I see. And I guess then moving on to more so the structure of Refold, was it always decided, because you mentioned in your most recent video that Matt's an advisor to Refold, was it always decided that that would be the structure from the start?
Yeah, actually it was. So when we got started with the project, one of the things that Matt told me, and he was very transparent about it, was that he'd been doing this thing for 5 years at that point, now 6 years. And he was just kind of burnt out on it. But he also saw the opportunity in it and knew it could go places. So he didn't want it to just die. He wanted somebody else to really like pick it up and run with it. And so the intention has basically always been that he and I would lay the foundation of the business together. And then once we felt that it was solid, that he would go on to, you know, whatever the next thing that he wanted to do was. Because I don't blame him, you know, like you spend 5 years answering basic questions about learning a language and learning Japanese, like it gets repetitive, right? And he had just come out of like the issue with MIA, which is, you know, traumatic. It's like an enormous breakup. So from my perspective, you know, that was fine. It made sense. There were definitely things that I needed from him in order to like lay the foundation of the business. But at a certain point, his role is really just an advisor. He just gives his input into what we're doing, what content we should create, what we should build, all that stuff. It was always part of the plan.
I see. And I guess now moving more towards your role in the company, what would you say your responsibilities are as the CEO of Refold?
Oh, God. The list is too long to count. In the past day or so, I was, you know, I woke up at 5 a.m. this morning and I did the finances of the business. And then I met with a developer in Bali. And then I did coding on my own. And then I like approved new merch for our store. I interact with the moderators. Basically, the way I see the role of a CEO is you get your hands dirty. You do the work. And then you get it to a place where you can hand it off to somebody else. So for instance, with our deck creation, we have 4 decks now, we're working on a 5th. And I was the project manager and like doing a lot of the hands-on work to build the first 4. But once I had gone through that process a couple times, I was able to document it, you know, write up the code in such a way that it was easy to use, and then hand it off to somebody else. And we actually hired somebody to manage decks going forward. And so basically as CEO, it's my responsibility to do everything until I can hand it off to somebody else.
I think you mentioned one time that, correct me if I'm wrong, but like you guys are like reinvesting everything you make back into the business.
Yeah. That's something that's really important to me. Patreon is great and we're very happy with all the support that we get, but the total amount of money that's coming in Patreon is not actually that much. The total amount of money that comes into Patreon is less than I was making as a software engineer 6 years ago. So there's not a lot of wiggle room for me to like take a salary right now because I need to put all of that money to use because it's important for me to continue to build this business. It's an investment on my part. So yes, we are reinvesting everything.
So does that mean like are you doing anything on the side or are you like full-time committed to Refold?
Oh no, I'm full-time. Yeah, with my last job, I basically quit my last job with the intention of looking, A, learning Spanish, and B, looking for a business opportunity to build. That was my intention sort of going out into the world. So I banked a whole bunch of money and then I like lived very frugally with the intention of, you know, being able to give myself 3 to 5 years without income.
It's pretty interesting to hear. And I mean, we can talk a little bit more about Refold as a whole too. And I think you'd be the best person to ask about what exactly the Refold method is for any of those who maybe don't know, who are listening to the podcast right now, and kind of like the end vision and the goal for that you see with Refold?
Well, yeah, I don't know if there is an end vision, right? Right? The goal is to, you know, build something that like can continue to exist in the future. But as far as what we're trying to accomplish, one of the things that I really hate is when I can't do something. And so I was pretty good at a lot of things in school, math, sciences, all those were no problem for me. Languages, I am probably the least talented language learner that exists on the planet. I like cannot, it just does not click for me. I see people like they learn words left and right, like they know how to use them immediately. And I'm just sitting there like blank stare. But, you know, I like to solve problems. And I got sort of obsessed with this idea of like, why is language learning, second language acquisition, why is that not a solved problem? There's so many different methods and guides, but so few people actually achieve a level of fluency. So like, why is the success rate so low? And why, with me actually putting in as much time and energy and effort as I was, why could I still not accomplish what I wanted to accomplish with a second language? And so that idea has just sort of like captivated me. And so I see our mission as like, let's solve that problem. How do we solve the problem of language learning or second language acquisition so that in the future, when people want to learn a language, there's a way to do it. And it's not like, oh, I've got to piece together courses from here and things from here. It's like, no, we're going to piece all of that together so that there's a complete solution for learning a language. And so long term, we can do all sorts of things with that, right? Like there's people all over the world. I think there's something like, I think 150 million, is that right? I don't know. Some number of millions or billions of people trying to learn English, right? Because if you're in a third world country and you don't have a lot of career opportunity ahead of you, learning English is a very easy way to unlock your career. Like your ability to make more money when you speak English, it just goes through the roof. So there's an enormous market and there's enormous demand for people trying to accomplish that goal. And so I want to solve that problem and then provide the solution to those people.
Right. So I guess like, what does that solution look like? Is it kind of like there's like options right now, like Duolingo type of apps or like Rosetta Stone or even like courses, like what kind of things are you thinking about offering in the future?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've just become convinced about is that there is no one tool that will ever solve the problem. Because it's such a long journey and what works at the beginning is not what works in the middle, which is not what works at the end. And so the way I see our role as just sort of integrating the existing tools, like we're tool agnostic. Like if you want to use Anki, go ahead. If you want to use Memrise, go ahead. Like both of those are purely are good options for learning vocabulary. We don't generally care. It's our role to just organize all of that and say, okay, if you're going to use this, then use it this way. And if you're going to use this, then use it this way and combine it with these other things and these other strategies at this, when you're at this stage. But then when you're later on, you know, modify your strategy in order to address these specific things. So the way that I've been describing it is we're sort of just integrating the existing solutions for that are targeted at specific problems and integrating them into one holistic solution for the entire process.
Right. So you guys aren't thinking about creating solutions like creating apps or courses in the future?
I mean, there's definitely apps and courses we want to do as well. Like on the app side, my opinion is that even though I'm a software engineer, I don't really like building technology because once you build it, you have to maintain it and maintaining technology is hard. And so from my perspective, there's already so many teams working on technology for language learning. The only reason I think we would want to build our own piece of that is if we see a gap in the marketplace. So if we say like, you know, Anki is a good enough solution for some people, but it's not for others. And so if nobody develops a good SRS for the more average learner, then eventually we might want to do that. But there's so many people working on SRS apps, like I have to imagine someone's going to build it first. So anyway, so that's sort of the app side. As far as the courses side, yeah, I think education is extremely important and extremely valuable. And I know that there's a lot of people in our community who feel that, you know, everything you need out there is free, right? So you shouldn't pay for anything. And if you convince people to buy something, then you clearly ripped them off. This is like a refrain I see constantly on Reddit and Discord too. And that just doesn't really jive with my worldview, with like how you value your time. And I could go into like a whole, are either of you familiar with opportunity cost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a concept. Right. So, you know, the way that I think about it is, you know, if you value your time at $15 an hour and you spend 2000 hours learning a language, then even if you don't spend an additional, like $1 more, you've already spent $30,000 on learning the language. So if we can provide a course that saves you 10 hours and we want to charge you $150 for it, then that is a good trade. Because you're spending the same amount of money and you got 10 hours back. And so that's really what the value of education is for me. It's recouping opportunity cost. It's speeding up the process. And so we can create courses that can help guide people through difficult parts of the journey. Like a lot of people have a lot of trouble right at the beginning when they're like getting everything set up. We get questions constantly. I answered a question today. Someone was asking, like, I don't know. Like, I've been a member of your Patreon for, you know, 6 months. I've been trying to do things. I can't figure it out. I just need step-by-step. And I like wrote up like a quick step-by-step guide for him. Boom, there you go. Right. A lot of people need that. They need that level of instruction and accountability and coaching, and they're willing to pay for it. And so that's what I see the value of educational courses are and what we would want to offer.
Now moving on more towards the language hacking side, like you mentioned, that's something that you were very involved in prior, right? As you mentioned a little bit in your introduction, how exactly did you get involved with that? And how was that part of your personal journey?
Yeah. So, you know, I did 6 years of Japanese in high school and college, and I came out of that knowing basically nothing. And so my conclusions were either I'm stupid and like can't learn a language, or Japanese is too hard and I won't be able to learn Japanese, or the way that they taught me is broken. And so I was like, well, I can address a couple of these. One, I refuse to accept I'm not smart. Two, I can choose an easier language. Spanish is more applicable to my life. I'm in the United States. And I can switch methods. So in 2016, I decided like, okay, this is my year of Spanish. I'm going to go hard on it. The first week of the year, I actually took off from work and I put in 80 hours into just like learning Spanish and researching how to learn a language. And I actually came across Ajat at one point, but like I could not make any heads or tails of the website. So what the general consensus on the internet, yeah, right. It's so hard to make sense of. The general consensus of the internet at that time was speak every day, and speak, you know, early. And even if you're doing it wrong. And the second is that languages are basically like Mad Libs. So you learn 100 nouns, 100 verbs, 100 adjectives, and you learn the basic conjugations and like sentence structures. And then boom, you have 10,000 sentences. And you can just practice those. And that really appealed to me because I have a physics and computer science background. So like algorithms are my jam. And so I looked at that, I'm like, ah, yes, it's just patterns. And you can like elaborate the pattern. so that like, I was so enthusiastic about language hacking because I'm like, oh my God, it's so much faster. You can start speaking so quickly. And you can like the language hacking approach, it really works if you want to start speaking quickly. Like I was having conversations in 2 months, and at the 6 month mark, I went to Guatemala to study at a school there for 2 weeks. And like the teachers were like blown away. You're like, oh my God, you've only been studying for 6 months. Holy crap. Because I was doing like 4 hours of language classes in the morning and like 4 hours of speaking with my host family at night. So you'd think that like with that level of conversational success, I would be happy, and I was not. I actually came out of that experience extremely depressed because I could not see how to get from where I was to get to where I wanted to be. I could have conversations for hours with people, but I could not understand two native speakers talking to each other. And I could tell that the things that I was saying did not sound like a native speaker. But I did not know how to bridge that gap. And so I actually cut my year short at that point, at that 6-month mark, because I was like, there's no point in me doing this. The only way I'm going to become fluent is if I move to South America. And that was sort of my reason for moving to South America in 2019, when I decided to actually start taking it seriously.
Right. I mean, yeah, why don't we talk about that? I mean, that's a huge move right there. I mean, just going straight into like, all right, I'm learning Spanish. All right, I'm moving my entire life to South America. And that's across multiple countries, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So in 2019, I actually told my company in 2018 that I was going to do this. And they're like, all right, great. Well, you know, I had to replace myself at work. So I had to hire a bunch of people. But I quit right. in 2019. And then I went first to Ecuador. And I was planning to do Ecuador and Colombia, but there was a national strike in Ecuador.
Right.
And so all the roads were blocked. There were things on fire. There were like people fighting in the streets. And so I ended up going south to Peru instead. I learned so much about South American politics. It was a really fun time. I wrote a blog about it. Anyways, yeah, so I went to Ecuador. I was actually at this cool school. They do Spanish lessons in the morning and then kite surfing lessons in the afternoon. And so I did that for like 3 weeks, and that was very fun. But my original intention was basically just to study at schools for months until I was fluent. And I got to this point with one of my teachers where he was explaining, I don't know if either of you have studied Spanish at all.
4 years.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
High school.
Yeah. Yep. Collectively 8 years or something like that.
Collectively yeah. 8 years.
Yeah. So he was explaining reflexive verbs to me, and I'd already studied some reflexive verbs, but what he said was like, yeah, there's some verbs that can not be used reflexively. There's some verbs that can only be used reflexively. There's some that can be used either or, and they mean the same thing. And there's some that can be used either or, but they mean different things. And I was like, okay, how do I know which is which? And he didn't have an answer. I was like, well, if there's no rule, if there's no pattern, then I can't hack my way through this. I can't extrapolate some rule just by thinking. And so that was sort of my come to Jesus moment, if you will, about language learning, where I just realized that traditional methods didn't work and language hacking wasn't going to work either. And that was when I had to figure out something else. And that's when I started searching around, found MatFish Japan and immersion learning, and that's what I've been doing ever since.
So I guess now, would you consider yourself fluent? Have you reached your initial goal of getting to that point?
No. Not even close. No, I mean, it's tough because obviously I'm working on Refold, which takes up an enormous amount of time. I'm working 12 hours a day. And so when I was just focused on input, it was relatively easy to get that in during the day because it's not that taxing to me. Like, I'm relatively introverted. Watching a Netflix show is very much my speed. But now that I'm in the phase of trying to speak, it is so much harder. And, you know, it was funny. We wrote the guide, and there's this like this feeling or this thought or this myth in the language learning community, or specifically in the immersion learning community, that like if you just get enough input, one day you'll wake up fluent. That doesn't seem to be true. It's definitely not true for me. And it, based on other people's experience I've talked to, like that's not true for them either. I think we drastically underestimate the amount of effort that you need to put into actually speaking in order to actually get to the level that you want to get to. Even if you have, you know, 5,000 hours of input, yeah, you might know the language really well, but you still need to like figure out how your mouth is supposed to move. So, you know, like I can have conversations, I had a my girlfriend's from Puerto Rico, and we were having a debate about why companies, I don't know if you've ever interviewed for a tech company, but they always want to have like some bigger purpose to your life. And like, we were debating that. She's like, it's stupid. Like, it's so dumb. And we were having this whole debate in Spanish. so like, yes, I can do that. I can have those conversations, but it's still like so uncomfortable for me to do. And the level that I want to get to is just, I want to be comfortable. I want it to feel good when I speak. I want to be able to know things immediately without having to think about them. And what that means is I basically like, I just need to speak a ton. Like, I don't know how many hundreds of hours, but it's going to be a lot.
But I guess speaking of the Quaticara message, I mean, it's something I know that you've just been, even before Refold, before everything happened, while you were in South America, I know you had the vision of the Quaticara message. And since then, you were thinking about what you would actually say in that moment. And, you know, it's a moment that everyone listening to the podcast just waits for, you know, like they go through and they're like, oh, what is Ethan going to say? What is our come to Jesus?
This is the come to Jesus Ethan, moment, you know? For the listeners.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Ethan, I'm gonna shine the lights bright on you right here. I mean, it's a big moment, but you're big enough to get the job done. No, we gotta add as much pressure as possible, you know. This is a come to Jesus moment here. Exactly. Like
so one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot is you constantly hear like language learning is a marathon, not a sprint, right? And people say that because they're like, oh, pace yourself, don't like go super hard and then burn out. Totally makes sense. But I actually don't really like that metaphor, because marathons still have a finish line and then they're over, whereas language learning is not. There is no finish line. And so if you focus so much on that finish line, you're going to be disappointed because it's never going to happen. You're never going to reach it. You will reach a level, but then you'll see like, oh, there's still much more to go. And so I think it's really important not to focus on the end goal. It's really important to just focus on what am I doing today to advance my goal to speak better or understand better. Because those little investments add up a lot over time. And then one day you wake up and you realize how far you've come. And you know, I've been at this language learning game for a really long time. I am not naturally talented at it. But I'm happy that I can watch a Spanish TV show and understand it. I am happy that I can have conversations in Spanish without too much trouble. And it took me a long time to get here, but I love doing it. So I hope that everybody out there focuses on what they're doing today to advance their goals and continues to do that every day until they feel happy with what they've achieved.
Nice.
But with that, Ethan, I just want to say it was wonderful having you on.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Really, really great to be here, to meet you both finally. And good luck to everybody out there with your immersion learning journey.
Hey guys, thanks for making it through the end of the podcast. Make sure to leave a comment down below if you use Refold.
But of course,
we gotta go thank our patrons now: Cedric Ferraz, Rich Van Quade, Kevin Allen Card, Drew Jack, Internet, Joey Case, Nighty Meredith, MTSX, and Nathan Pullers.
And Sad Boy.